A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel wrote in with a question about whether the Gaza Strip is actually one place or several places wearing the same postal code. He stood at the edge of it, at Zikim and Netiv Ha'asara, and he says there's something about being right on that line that makes the scale feel real in a way the news never does. His point is that Gaza gets treated as this enormous geopolitical entity, but it's 41 kilometers long and between 6 and 12 wide. And inside that strip, you've got Gaza City, Rafah, Deir al-Bala, Khan Yunis, Jabalia, a string of refugee camps, agricultural land, a buffer zone. So his question is, whether the internal divisions are real, or whether this is like the Tel Aviv metro area, where the municipal boundaries say 20 cities, but the ground says one continuous urban blob.
He's asking whether the taxonomy is doing work or just doing paperwork.
Right. Is Rafah a separate political culture from Gaza City? Or is that like asking whether Ramat Gan has a separate foreign policy from Tel Aviv?
The honest answer is that the deepest split in Gaza has never been north versus south. It's been refugee versus native, camp versus city. And that split was engineered.
Engineered by whom?
Partly by circumstance and partly by design. When the 1948 war ended, over 200,000 refugees poured into a strip that had maybe 80,000 native residents. So overnight, the population tripled and the newcomers outnumbered the locals nearly 3-1. And the locals, the established families, the wealthy merchant clans in Gaza City, they looked at the camp people differently. Not as fellow citizens, as a burden. There's a line in the Palestinian oral history record that camp dwellers were treated the way the established families treated the poor of the cities or the rural provinces. The status of living in a camp stuck to people.
So the class line was also a geographic line.
And it hardened into a political line. The camps became the recruiting ground for the factions. The established families were more tied to the old notables, the traditional leadership. And the camps were full of people who'd lost everything and had no stake in the old order. That's where the radical politics fermented.
And then the Israelis came in and, what, reinforced the fragmentation?
Deliberately. Ariel Sharon ran operations in 1970 and 1971 with a strategy called the Five Fingers. The idea was to break the strip into five zones, physically separate them, so that Palestinian political organization couldn't operate as a single body. Roads, checkpoints, military positions, all placed to split Gaza City from the central camps, from Khan Yunis, from Rafah. And then in 1972, the military authority decreed that the refugee camps should be folded into nearby municipalities, dissolving their separate administrative identity. Gaza City's council refused to absorb the camps, so the military dissolved the council.
Wait. Gaza City refused to take the camps, and the response was to fire the city government?
That's the record. The military authority wanted the camp's separate identity gone. The city didn't want the camp populations under its jurisdiction, so the military just removed the city's government and imposed the merger.
That's a hell of a way to build social cohesion.
It wasn't about cohesion, it was about control. A fragmented population with no unified administrative voice is easier to manage.
So when Daniel asks whether Rafah has a separate political culture from Gaza City, the answer is that the real fault line runs through the middle of every town, not between the towns.
I think that's right. Though the towns do have distinct characters, Rafah is the border town. 11 kilometers of frontier with Egypt, the crossing, the smuggling tunnels. Its economy and its politics were always shaped by that border in a way Gaza City's never was. When the Rafah crossing opened or closed, that was a local event. The 2008 breach, when people poured across the border into Egypt to buy goods, that was Rafah's specific experience.
And Deir al-Bala?
Deir al-Bala is the agricultural middle. Date palms historically, that's what the name means. Monastery of the Dates. It's smaller, more spread out, lower density. Khan Yunis has its own identity too, tied to the Bedouin tribal structure. The Bedouin in Gaza are organized into six tribal confederations, and they're concentrated more in the middle and southern parts of the strip. The Al-Tarabin Confederation alone has 21 clans. Nusayrat Camp takes its name from a local Bedouin tribe.
I didn't know there was a Bedouin presence inside Gaza.
Significant one, and it predates the refugee influx, so you've got this layering. The native Gazans, the Bedouin, the 1948 refugees, and then within the refugees, eight separate camps with different origins. Biraj Camp was mostly people from the towns east of Gaza, like Fallujah. Jabalia Camp was mostly people from villages in the south of what became Israel. So even the refugee population wasn't homogeneous. Different villages, different clans, different dialects.
Different dialects?
Subtle ones. But yes, you could tell roughly where someone's family came from by how they spoke. That matters for social organization. People settled in camps with others from their region. The camp became a kind of transplanted village.
So the strip is a patchwork of transplanted villages, native towns, Bedouin confederations, and a few old merchant families, all crammed into a space smaller than the municipality of Jerusalem.
Smaller than a lot of single cities. 365 square kilometers. Washington, D.C. is about half that. So Gaza is slightly more than twice the size of D.C., and it holds over 2 million people. The density is around 6,000 per square kilometer, which is comparable to London as a city. But London is a city. Gaza is a whole territory with farmland and a buffer zone and military areas.
And the camps are denser still. Jabalia Camp is 1.4 square kilometers with 116,000 registered refugees. That's over 80,000 people per square kilometer.
The camp average is around 55,000 per square kilometer, nearly double the strip average. And half of Gaza's refugees still live inside the camps, over half of them in poverty. So the camp isn't a transitional thing. It's been three generations now.
That's the part that breaks the conurbation analogy. Tel Aviv and its suburbs are a continuous urban area where the boundaries are invisible because the socio-economic gradient is smooth. You cross from Ramat Gan to Givatayim and nothing changes. Gaza's internal boundaries are visible. The camp ends and the city begins. There's a wall, or there was, and a different density, a different built form, a different social status,
and a different political history. The camps were the base of the First Intifada. The Islamic movements, including Hamas, grew out of the camps and the poorer quarters, not out of the merchant families of Gaza City. The old families were secular nationalists, tied to Fatah or the left factions. So when Hamas won the 2006 election and then took the strip by force in 2007, that was in part the camps defeating the city.
The periphery taking the center.
Which is a strange thing to say about a place where the periphery is 10 minutes from the center. But socially, yes. The camp population had the numbers and the mobilization. The established families had the wealth and the connections, but they couldn't match the organizational discipline of the Islamist movements.
So if Daniel is asking whether Gaza is one political entity, or several, the answer has to be historical. For most of its modern history, it's been several entities forced into one container. And the forcing was done by whoever was in charge at the time.
Egypt administered the strip from 1948 to 1967 and never annexed it. It was a separate administrative zone, not part of Egypt proper. The Palestinians there had no Egyptian citizenship, so even under Arab rule, Gaza was an anomaly. Then Israel took it in 1967 and ran it as occupied territory, with the fragmentation policies we talked about. Then the Oslo process created the Palestinian Authority, which was supposed to unify Gaza and the West Bank. That never really happened. Then Hamas took over in 2007 and ran it as a de facto statelet. And now, as of July, Hamas has formally dissolved its government. The UN Security Council passed Resolution 2803 last November, setting up a transitional administration with a Board of Peace and a National Committee. So the question of whether Gaza is one political entity is, right now, literally unresolved on paper.
The governance vacuum is the answer to Daniel's question, in a way. You can't ask whether Rafah and Gaza City share a political culture when there's no functioning government to express either one.
But the underlying social structure persists regardless of who's nominally in charge. The clans, the camps, the families, the tribes, that's what actually governs daily life in a place with no reliable state.
And the war has scrambled the geography. The OCHA governorate profiles from last November note that the five governorates were affected differently by the fighting, the shifting front lines, the displacement patterns. People move south, then north, then south again. The population of Rafah at one point swelled to over 1 million, then emptied. So the lived geography of the Strip right now is a geography of displacement, not of stable neighborhoods.
Which makes the conurbation question almost academic at this moment. The Strip was never a single undifferentiated mass, but the war has mixed the population in ways that will take years to sort out. And the economic collapse means everyone is poor now. The economy is at 13% of its 2022 size. Unemployment at 46% overall, 70% for young people. The old distinction between the merchant families and the camp poor is still there socially, but the material gap has narrowed because everyone's been leveled.
That's a grim kind of homogenization.
It is, and it's the kind of thing that can either dissolve old identities or harden them. When people lose everything, they sometimes cling harder to the clan, the camp, the village of origin, because it's the only social capital they've left.
So what's the actual answer to Daniel? If he's standing at the fence at Zikim, looking at the northern end of the Strip, what's he looking at?
He's looking at a territory that's formerly 5 governorates and 25 municipalities. But socially, it's a mosaic of refugee camps, native towns, Bedouin confederations, and old merchant families. The municipal boundaries are real on paper and mostly invisible on the ground. The social boundaries are invisible on paper and very real on the ground. The deepest split is refugee versus native, camp versus city, and that split has been there since 1948.
And the political expression of that split has shifted over time. The old secular nationalists, the Islamists, the clan networks. Right now, with Hamas's government dissolved and the transitional arrangement not yet functional, the question of what Gaza is as a political entity is more open than it's been in decades.
I'd add one more thing. The size. 41 kilometers. You can drive from Beit Hanun in the north to Rafah in the south in under an hour, and that's with checkpoints. So when we talk about Rafah having a different political culture from Gaza City, we're talking about a difference that exists across a distance shorter than the drive from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv. It's real, but it's compressed. It's a difference of social origin and political history, not of geography.
Which is exactly Daniel's point about the Tel Aviv metro. The municipal lines don't describe the lived reality. But in Gaza, the lived reality is that the internal lines are social, not municipal. The camp boundary matters more than the city boundary.
And the camp boundary was deliberately maintained. The UNRWA camps have their own administration, their own services, their own schools. They're not just neighborhoods, they're institutional islands inside the Strip. So the fragmentation isn't only historical, it's ongoing. The camps are governed differently from the municipalities, and the municipalities are governed differently from the agricultural areas, and the border zones are governed by the military.
4 different legal regimes inside a territory the size of a small city.
At least 4. And the buffer zone along the Israeli border, which Daniel mentioned, adds a 5th. The restrictions on movement near the fence mean that whole agricultural strips are effectively off-limits to normal life. So even the geography of where people can live and work is shaped by security logic, not by municipal planning.
I keep coming back to the 1972 episode, Gaza City's council refusing to absorb the camps, and the military authority dissolving the council. That's the whole story in miniature. The established leadership didn't want the refugees. The occupying power wanted administrative tidiness. The refugees wanted recognition. Nobody got what they wanted, and the result was a fractioned polity that never developed a unified civic identity.
And then Hamas came along and imposed a kind of unity from above. But it was the unity of a security apparatus, not a civic one. The factions were suppressed, the clans were co-opted, and the camps were the base of support. So for 17 years, Gaza looked from the outside like a single political entity because one organization controlled it. But that was a veneer.
A veneer that's now gone.
And what's underneath is the old mosaic, plus the wreckage of the war, plus the displacement. Nobody knows what the political map will look like when the dust settles.
So if I had to answer Daniel in one line, I'd say Gaza isn't a conurbation and not a microstate. It's a compressed archipelago of social islands, and the water between them is history.
That's actually not bad.
Don't sound so surprised.
I'm not surprised. I'm just checking whether the sloth still has it.
The sloth never lost it. The sloth was napping on it.
There's one more thing worth pulling out. Daniel mentioned that he's visited the communities around the Strip, Zikim, and Netiv Ha'asara. Those are places that were hit on October 7th, and standing at the edge, he said, makes the scale tangible. I think there's a counterpart to that from inside the Strip. The people in the northern camps, Jabalia and Beit Lahia, they've been displaced multiple times. Their mental map of the Strip isn't the municipal map. It's a map of safe zones and dangerous zones, of places they fled from and places they fled to.
The internal geography of Gaza right now is a geography of trauma, not of administration.
That's the thing the governorate profiles are trying to capture. The OCHE report from November says the five governorates have different needs, different vulnerabilities, different recovery prospects. That's not because Rafah and Gaza City have different political cultures. It's because the war hit them differently.
Which brings us back to Daniel's instinct. He said the formal taxonomies can be misleading. In Gaza's case, the formal taxonomy of governorates and municipalities was always weak. The real taxonomy is camps, clans, and cities. And now the war has scrambled even that.
You keep saying camps.
Because that's where half the refugees live.
No, I mean the word, camp. It sounds temporary. Those places have been there since 1949.
That's the standard UNRWA terminology. Refugee camps. It's always been misleading.
I did a stint with a road crew in Jordan in 2008. We were resurfacing the highway from Amman to Zarqa. Zarqa's got one of those camps. It's a city. Shops, schools, apartment blocks. Nobody's living in tents. The only thing that makes it a camp is the sign and the UN office.
Same in Gaza. The camps are dense urban neighborhoods. The name is a legal artifact.
That's the thing about your archipelago. The islands aren't separated by water. They're separated by paperwork. Different administrations, different services, different status. But the people cross those lines every day. They work in the city and sleep in the camp. They marry across the lines.
They do. The social boundaries are real, but they're porous. The camp identity matters, but it's not a prison.
We had a guy on the crew. His family was from one of the villages outside Haifa. He'd never been there. Born in Zarqa camp. But he could tell you the name of his grandfather's olive grove. That's what the camp does. It preserves the village as a memory. The camp is a place, but it's also a claim.
A claim to return.
Or a claim to be recognized. Depends who you ask. The old man just wanted to see the grove once before he died. He didn't.
The camps in Gaza work the same way. Jabalia, Bureje, Nusirat, they're named for the places people came from or the tribes that were there. The camp preserves the origin story.
That's why the 1972 thing mattered. Folding the camps into the municipalities wasn't administrative tidiness. It was trying to erase the origin story. Make the camp just another neighborhood, and the claim fades.
But it didn't work. The camp identity got stronger.
Because people don't forget what you try to take from them. They put it in the name. They teach it to the kids. The grove becomes a story, and the story becomes the whole reason you're still in Zarqa and not in Haifa.
The answer to Daniel's question is that the internal divisions in Gaza are real, but they're not the divisions on the municipal map. They're divisions of origin and status, and they've been deliberately maintained, and they've been deliberately attacked, and neither worked.
The archipelago is real. The water is history, and the bridges are stories.
The road crew would have said it simpler. The map lies, the camp remembers.
That's going to stick with me.
I've got a box of maps in the flat. Road maps from every job. They all lie. That's what maps do. They freeze a place that's already moved on.
The one thing I'd want a listener to take from this is that Gaza's internal geography isn't a smaller version of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's its own conflict, fought over the meaning of a place that's 41 kilometers long. The question of whether Rafah is different from Gaza City is the wrong question. The right question is why the camp boundary matters more than the city boundary, and the answer is 1948.
That boundary was never allowed to heal. It was reinforced by every administration that touched the Strip, from the Egyptians to the Israelis to the Palestinian Authority to Hamas. The divisions were useful to whoever was in charge.
The conurbation analogy only gets you halfway. Gaza is one continuous urban area, yes, but the internal lines aren't invisible, the way they're in the Tel Aviv metro. They're the most visible thing in the place.
The future question is whether the transitional administration can build something that respects the real social structure without being captured by it. That's an open question, and it's the one I'll be watching.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop.
If you want to send us a prompt, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We read everything.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.